My degree is teaching and learning, actually. That's the title of the degree I have, which I thought was really weird at first, but it is really true. Like, if you're talking about being a lifelong learner, you're always teaching, you're always learning.
That's the best way to learn something, actually, is to teach it to somebody else.
Absolutely, but the worst educators are those who no longer want to learn and are just convinced of their own intellect. Can't stand it. And just, I learned it once back in the 80s, and I've stopped now, and everything I know is... And not being able to pivot and understand, like I said earlier, meet people where they are. There's new ways to communicate, new ways to have conversations, and new levels of understanding that didn't apply. And if you can't pivot, well...
I mean, like, is Pluto a planet?
I don't know. So. Welcome back to Project Good Food. Each episode, we sit down and discuss what redefining a healthy, inclusive, and sustainable food system looks like right here in San Diego's Good Food District. But today's conversation is a little bit different. Now, my name is Brandon Johnson, and I'm here with Diane Moss.
And we're having a conversation today with folks who have generational ties to southeastern San Diego, the area we call the Good Food District. And we'll be discussing a cultural holiday, Kwanzaa, and how it's played out over the years in San Diego.
Welcome to Project Good Food.
So we've gathered people around. We all know one another, and we got this topic we want to talk about that's important to each of us. We got some lived experience we want to share with others. I call this Kwanzaa San Diego style. Past and the present. What's going on in terms of traditions? So the first question for all of us, and anybody can start, how did you get introduced to Kwanzaa? What was the circumstances? What was the year? What's your lineage? Who are you next to that you celebrated Kwanzaa with? Anybody can start. Take your time.
Okay, Rodney West. I was introduced to Kwanzaa, I would say back in 1986. Remember that? Of course, Kwanzaa was already existed for 20 years because it started in 1966, but I moved into this community in 1986. Well, actually, it was before, and during that time, I was learning myself as far as I grew up in a very diverse community, but came into Southeastern, and Kwanzaa was seen to be a thing. I shouldn't say a thing, but a time with this, talk about this celebration, this harvest, talking about the first fruit. So there was a lot of community engagement, and there was a principal each day, and each day, that principal was actually at a different location. So different organizations took part in it. They were in charge. And each time we talked about that particular principal for that day, we had panels, but we all also had the cultural expressions as well. So that was pretty much my introduction. And then the other thing, what I really loved about it, it was an intergenerational approach. So it was for everybody, the children, the elders. And so it was a beautiful thing to see.
My name is Jonathan. I am the son of Rodney West. So I will also have to say I was introduced to Kwanzaa in 1986. What was different for me was that I was taken along for the journey of my father learning who he was and about himself. He was an open book, and he allowed us to follow him into that journey so that we also learned who we were and who we were about at a young age and the things that defined us and made us who we were as we continue to follow in the past in the footsteps of my father, who I sit next to every day and continue to learn and enjoy the knowledge that he bestows upon me, including Kwanzaa as we see it today in 2025.
Oh, I guess I should go. I'm Luana, sometimes known as Firiali. And my introduction to Kwanzaa was actually my first year of college. I was a freshman in Starla Lewis's class. It was sociology from a Black perspective. And I learned a lot in that one little semester. And one of the things that I learned about was Kwanzaa. And, you know, the celebration of it didn't really kick off until later when I was at San Diego State and I was actively engaged with the Pan-African Association of America. And the first real Kwanzaa celebration I went to was at Boone Elementary School. And, I had my children with me. And I don't know if they got more out of it than me, but, you know, for me, it was really important for them to not have to wait till they got to college to start learning who they were.
My name is Mwenda Kadumu Biggs, and my introduction to Kwanzaa started right from the beginning. I was just a little over a month old, the first Kwanzaa that was celebrated in Los Angeles. In fact, my arrival caused my parents to miss the first Kwanzaa. So forevermore after that, they would talk about how, oh, we missed the first Kwanzaa because you were born and we had to stay home. But the first one I then celebrated was when I was 1 year old. So I've been celebrating Kwanzaa for 58 years now. And I think for me, it has really morphed into something that we can embrace as a people. I've celebrated Kwanzaa here in San Diego. I've celebrated it in the Bay Area. I've celebrated it in North Carolina, and I've celebrated it in Ghana, West Africa. And I think being able to take Kwanzaa with us everywhere we go is something that is important to me.
Okay. I came from Los Angeles to San Diego. My name is Diane Moss. I'm one of the hosts here. Hi, how? Okay. I came to UCSD. The community I came from was about 98% African American. There was never a conversation about race because everybody was Black, so we didn't talk about it. We just were good humans. But I got here, and the university was another setting. It wasn't as many African Americans. I was in cultural shock. I met Robert Tambuzi the first week I got to San Diego. And I watched him in this classroom setting, and he was always prepared. You know, Tambuzi was like brilliant, far as I'm concerned, but he was armed with Kawida philosophy. He gave the professors a run for their money. They thought they came together with their syllabus. He would blast them. Kawida for me is an ethical reference. I got the pleasure of having my first Kwanzaa with Dr. Karenga when he lived here in San Diego in National City. It was at that Kwanzaa that I gained my family name or my new name, Yenyekevu, living up to the values that people around you saw as important. So Yenyekevu means to be humble and self-righteous in a good way. I try to live up to that every day in my work here with Project New Village. So I think I was 19 years old, 1977. My first Kwanzaa was here in San Diego.
You know, when I was at San Diego State, Tambuzi used to come to like all of the African Student Union programs and events, and he was always there just like making sure, you know, there was a level of accountability that I think, I don't know that that there's anybody doing that now in terms of making sure that young people who are like emerging into the world of consciousness, you know,
have a place to land.
Yeah, like having like, yeah, having that guidance to make sure, because it's easy. It's like when somebody gets introduced to Christianity and they're like newly saved, they're running around with a Bible, judging people and doing weird stuff, right? And I think it's that equivalent, you know, when young people come into consciousness without proper guidance.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I agree 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
You know, looking back on your earliest memories of Kwanzaa, and it seems like you were all introduced at different times in your life, I have a question. I'm curious, as you thinking about the Nguzo Saba, the seven principles, I'm curious, when you first learned about Kwanzaa, which most resonated with you? And today, is that still the case? Which principle most strongly shows up in your life today?
Oh, I like to go with that one. So when we were celebrating Kwanzaa growing up in our household, we, and with the NIA organization, we would sometimes celebrate it as a group with us organization folks coming down from LA, or we'd go up to LA and we celebrate it. But one thing that always happened was that the Watoto, the children, had to describe the principles, right? So you had to talk about each of the principles and you had to say, and so Umoja was my favorite because I could memorize everything about it. Like I felt comfortable saying Umoja means unity, to strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, nation, and race. And that I remembered. And if you gave me one of the other ones and I didn't know the exact words, then I felt a little like, you know, I think as I have grown, I still think Umoja is really a foundational principle, because without it, there's nothing. There's nothing without it, you know, unity, right? So even now, I would say unity.
So for me, I don't know, it's because it was like so hard for everybody to say the word right, or because of just who I am, but it was always Kuji Chagalia. And it still resonates with me because so much of who I am has been me defining myself in ways that went beyond the boxes that people always try to put me in, and encouraging other people to acknowledge, you know, that they can define themselves, they can create their own life and be whoever it is they see themselves as once they're clear on who they are. And it's like being centered and grounded, because like, how can I relate to you if I don't even know me?
I will also have to follow behind and say Kuji Chagalia. And the reason why I say Kuji Chagalia is because I grew up in a time where our parents were teaching us who we were and what we were about and what we were determined to be. We were also given the opportunity to grow into our own and to be who we were with the understanding and learning of our ancestry and where we came from. And inside of that and all of that culminating into who we become as individuals, and it's something that transgressed from my parents, and it's something that I try and give to my children as well in a subconscious way, so that they can also have the ability to be able to grow, build, and populate in their own way, on their own terms, at their own time. Growing up in Southeast San Diego, we had to create our own identities and stick to them. One thing that my parents used to always tell me is to not become a product of my environment. And to not become a product of my environment is to build and to grow into someone that you are proud of, that you are strong with, and that you want to continue to hold on to for the entirety of your life.
I'm going to have to say, I want to say Umoja, because I think that's really the foundation in this. Other things, but I want to see self-determination. Again, that is also the time when the elders, the community gave, I received a name in the naming ceremony for that, which is Sawazi Anumatu, which really resonates. Every time I hear that name, it means I gotta be correct. It really means it's not like my other name. So which Swazi means he is knowledge, Anumatu means he walks in the way he talks. So when given that name, it wasn't anything someone pulled out of a hat. It was well thought out, some elders got together, and this was also via the organization Pan-African Associations of America as well. So, and besides I think the other profound thing was, you know, we talk about the Imbuza Saba, the principles, but the symbols itself that's on the table, that is powerful as well. So when we talk about the settings, the fruit, the corn, the candles, the keika, the mat, the foundation, it's real deep. So
I've never thought of a favorite. I just live my life by all of them. But for to say, for your question's sake, I'm going to go with Nia. Purpose. The intentionality with which we live our lives and set the example for others that are paying attention. We have to be, what is it? Because you black don't mean you know black. We're an example. We're supposed to be the best that we can be. And you honor that every day by what you do and you don't do. So, purpose.
And I'll answer. You know, I was going to say self-determination, but the more I thought about it, I said one of the principles that has strongly influenced my life is creativity and really being able to look at something from a variety of perspectives and think outside the box and just creativity. You know, sometimes it's in the arts, but sometimes it's in the ways that you relate to another person. And I've had to be creative in conversations and learn to meet people where they are and say, well, that's the truth of kind of what's guided me in the last few years, if I have to think about it. I would love to hear from anyone, but since you started, Rodney, about the importance of the symbols in Kwanzaa and what they mean to you, and to share with those who are listening who are new to Kwanzaa and don't know.
Okay, well, we have the corn, or the hindi, if you will, and this represents the corn that's in the basket, represents the children, represents the future. And if you don't have any children in your family, you make sure that you at least have one ear corn in there that representing the future. If you got three children, you got five, then that's how many ears of corn that you're going to put on that mat. And then you have your fruit, you're representing the harvest. The mat again is the foundation of all that. That's a little different. The colors of the candles, the red, the black, the green, defining the land, the color of the people, the freedom. And what else do we have? What's be another? Then even the artifacts on there, handmade. Then the last day, we'll probably get that a little later as far as what gives you get to the Watotos or the children, if you will, and what kind of gifts they are to receive. So,
in practicing Kwanzaa over the years, what's your best community remembrance? Like you say, there were different places, different folks did different types of activities. Where would you say your favorite Kwanzaa programming?
So my favorite Kwanzaa program would probably have to be when it was held at Martin Luther King Park. When it was held at Martin Luther King Park, I got the opportunity to see some of the public leaders and some of the elders that I would see throughout the weeks. But during Kwanzaa, it was different. Everyone was dressed in their best daishikis. Everybody came out. Everyone had a smile on their face. It was when we would see the Teisato-san drummers. We would see the stilt walkers would come out. The community would come out, and they would represent Southeast San Diego in the grandest, greatest way. And it was just a good energy and a good vibe every year, all of the time. I was laughing with my dad yesterday, when we were talking, because I remember that there was a haircut place inside of the Kwanzaa program that we had this year. And I decided to go over. And by the time I went back to my mom and dad, I had a map of Africa carved in the back of my head, because I was just that determined to be a part of the Kwanzaa celebration that was going on. And every year it was great. It never failed me. And every year I learned so much about what had been going on that year and the knowledge that I gained from the elders that were there and the new faces that I was introduced to every year as Kwanzaa proceeded.
I don't know if I have a favorite, because they're all important. They all have their own energy. They have their own way. I've been to, probably some of the most intriguing ones when I got to hear Dr. Karinga himself speak at a couple of Kwanzaa events. Once down at Balboa Park one year, and one time down at the Malcolm X Library. He spoke on the opening night of Emoja. Listening to the elders speak, I mean, I can still hear it today. And, you know, it was so profound, and it left a mark on me, too. And now that I'm up there in the age, and it's kind of like, you know, when you get older, and it's like, wait a minute, I'm there. So I arrived, so I'm pushing forward to that and make it, you know, carrying that choice. And most of those, and a lot of those people I was talking about now are ancestors. So I'm still communicating with those ancestors and pushing forward. So, in the words of Sankofa, you know, correct what has not been done. So.
So for me, when we're thinking about like public ceremonies, I think, and maybe it's because of when I was introduced, the programs that we did at Boone Elementary, because it was, even though it was at an institution, it was very community-based. And, you know, at that time I was a college student. And so the intergenerational aspect of it, you know, there were things that we did, there were things, you know, from the little children with Capoeira, Tesa Chasan, and just, it was very, you know, inclusive in terms of the diversity within our community. Because sometimes we think of our experience, sometimes we want to think of it as monolithic, and it's really not. And it was one of the places where we got to see everybody, like, it was almost like gumbo, but with people.
I've been hosting Imani, a celebration on Imani, the last day of Kwanzaa, for 17 years now in North Carolina, in Durham, North Carolina, because that's where we were living. My sister and her kids, two sisters and their children, and my mom and dad would come out when Baba was still alive, and then my mom would still come out. But in 2023, I had moved back to San Diego, and I hosted my first time ever hosting Imani. And my dad always used to host Imani here in San Diego, sometimes at home amongst our family, but a lot of times in public places, he would host big Kwanzas, right? And we would come and be a part of that. And I hosted my first one in San Diego in 2023, and my cousin's kids came, and my cousin was there. And afterwards, she sent me her mom, Kikanza, my aunt, sent me a message, a text message, of how excited she was that her grandchildren were able to recite the principles and had participated in Kwanzaa. And to me, that was like, that was something. Baba would be very proud of that.
Nice.
Again, I'm a transport from Los Angeles. So as a college student for decades, from 19 to probably COVID, I traveled to Los Angeles on the last day of the year because Dr. Kuranga and the US organization would host these big Karamu celebrations. So all the cultural dancing, the storytelling, the imagery, the camaraderie in the room, it was the best thing to do on the last day of the year. And then you come back to San Diego and reflect, now what am I supposed to do this year? So, I don't know, I did decades, yeah.
Reflect. And we live in a society that rushes past reflection, especially in this new digital age. And Kwanzaa is different from a religious holiday. So I'm curious, how does Kwanzaa shape or affirm your identities as Black people?
As Ms. Moss said, she lives by the principles every day. And I think we all do as well, subconsciously or consciously. Once you learn these principles, it's something that's embedded in you. It's something that you think about while you're sleeping. You walk with them, you talk with them, you understand them in intricate details, even when we're not speaking about them. They carry a pride within each syllable and each word that you will never be able to forget. It will never leave your soul and it will never leave your body. The Nguzu Saba is something that is branded on your heart when you are introduced into Kwanzaa, and that's just what it is. It represents everything to me. It represents every aspect of life that I've ever been introduced to, from my dad to Diane Moss, to Jason, to you, to these young ladies sitting over here, my brother sitting on the couch. It is a part of everything that I do in this world. They were made for me so that I can become a better person in this world on a daily basis. I work hard every day to be a better man today than I was yesterday, and to be a better father to my children and a great grandfather to my grandchildren as they grow and they develop. They will also walk in the Nguzu Saba, because I will introduce it to them every day of my life that I am alive.
I want to echo those same sentiments, being involved in other, you know, rites of passage, boyhood to manhood. You know, we talk about the Nguzu Saba, and some people, I'm taking it, some people might only visit that once a year with us, Kwanzaa, but for me, it became lifestyle, if you were. The principles were reflected. You know, you have them posted up at home. It's something that you practice, that you talk about, and so that becomes your life. It's a way of life. And as Dr. Karinga was saying, there's only seven, and it's hard to focus just on, you know, all those seven. Could you imagine we had more trying to focus? But just think, just putting all your time and your energy, and if we can get these seven and have them in sync and working those every day, how our community would be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And have it grow them. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. They're a roadmap, as both of you are saying. They're a roadmap for how to live our lives, but not just how to individually live our lives, but how to live our lives in community, right? I think that's one of the things that the US organization, the NIA organization, was about unity. It was about community and living our life in that community. We had communal dinners. We went to school together. We did our summer school together, School of African American Culture. We had all of those things because we were building community together. And I think that as a roadmap, the Nguzu Saba are perfect for that. As an opportunity, so many things pull us apart as Black people in America. So many things are, what political stance are you? What religious stance are you? You know, light skin, dark skin, you know, east side, west side, you know, what colors do you wear? So many things pull us apart. I think that Kwanzaa is an opportunity for us to lay down all those things and to come together, right? And I think that is a way to move forward, right? To lean in on Garvey, and the colors that Garvey passed on to us as a people, and big up in, you know, the Honorable Messiah Garvey. I think that's really important, and it's an important part of Kwanzaa. And so as a roadmap, to answer your question.
Yeah. This is more or less putting the principles into practice. And you can kind of see if they're practice or not, because when Kwanzaa comes about and you're saying the Habari Gani, and sometimes people are, they're floored because, what principle is it today? That kind of thing. So, but each day when Habari Gani, that is your response is to recite that principle of the day. Habari Gani. Mm-hmm. Habari, what's the good news? What's the good word?
So for me, you know, similarly, it's a roadmap. I embed the principles of Kwanzaa into most of my work. So much of what I do is, I guess the word would be esoteric. And I intentionally create space where instead of telling people about principles and values, embed them in the environment so that they can experience those principles and values.
So we live in a world with a lot of different types of people, different colors, different class backgrounds. This allows me to set boundaries, to be grounded in our own culture, to identify in a way that is affirmative. I know the things I can compromise on and the things I can't. And the litmus test is the seven principles. If I don't find it in the seven principles, then I don't venture out. It's just my grounding piece.
I'd love to hear any personal traditions that have made Kwanzaa for you feel less symbolic and more brought to life in your own homes as you've grown up or you personally do now.
So I'll say for me, it's action oriented. I've spent a lot of time studying theory, a lot of different theories in life. And I'm always looking for ways to put those principles into practice because, you know, I'm learning more. Kind of like Maya Angelou said, people don't care until they know how much you care and they'll remember mm-hmm. how you made them feel. I feel like that in terms of trying to teach principles. We can use words all day long, but actually demonstrating through action is a more meaningful way. And then giving other people the opportunity to experience or practice through action, I think is how we move closer to the society that the principles of Kwanzaa have like set us up to aspire to and create.
Hmm. I remember we did a gift giving celebration, but everything we gave had to be something we already owned that we, you know, felt would be very personable to the other person. And we had to wrap it in something that was also meaningful, whether it would be a newspaper article or article of clothing. And I remember that tradition being started when I first got introduced to Kwanzaa. And ever since then, I said, wow, what a special way of giving gifts. And so it would be this. I would listen to a CD and say, this person needs to hear this. And so, you know, it was great. And it was very personal.
And I would say that would be a personal thing for me as well. On the particularly going to the last day of Kwanzaa. I mean, you guys spoke to it earlier about the gifts or the Zawadis, if you will. What kind of gifts am I going to give my children? You know, so it was always something cultural. So it wasn't going to be any kind of those things that people get at Christmas, video games or anything like that, but something primarily books, especially when we had our pyramid bookstore, that was another staple in our community. I would, you know, get a lot of cultural books, you know, children's books, some of the practicing cooperative economics in the community. So there was vendors. So there were garments I can buy. It was you know, a lot of different things. All my sons had djembes, drums, and so again, there was something that they can go on. You know, same with my oldest daughter. So garments and what have you.
I remember buying garments from you at City College when I was a student there.
For me, it was all about family and community, mm-hmm. and it still is. Mm-hmm. It was an opportunity for me to see my community come together and to see how strong we were mm-hmm. and to get an actual visualization of the ideologies that were talked about by the elders that stood on the podiums and talked to us during Kwanzaa. I loved the experience of seeing strong, intelligent, well-dressed, well-to-do Black people that wanted to facilitate that same thing into the communities that they were manifesting into. Just as I'm sitting here with my dad, Rodney West, and Miss Diane Moss, they were intricate in creating the man and the person that I am today. And to be able to have been connected and raised and nurtured into the man that I've become is a work in progress. And it's something that I'm very proud of. And the ideology and the unity of Kwanzaa is one of those staples where all of us did come together under a common goal and a common umbrella, and the red, the black, and the green that everybody followed underneath. And it still stands today, with Miss Moss being here, continuing to strive and drive through the Nguzu Saba every day and what it is that she does here, and to sit next to my father every day and be very proudful in filling the shoes that he has left behind for me, as well as the community members that respect him. So for me, and still stands, it's about family and community.
One of my favorite things, traditions that we practice is on the last day of Kwanzaa, during our ceremony, we all go around and talk about our intentions for the next year. And even more so than like making a New Year's resolution, these intentions are public. You know, they're public intentions about yourself and where you want to be and how that's going to help your community. Right, how it's going to help our community. And so that practice of sitting and talking and going from the eldest to the very youngest, even the baby that can't completely speak, but everybody really encouraging that baby to say something, because we know that they're listening and they're a part of it, and they are also that they're our future. And so that's my favorite tradition, when we go around and talk about it.
It's a lot of traditions, but I like the libation statement. Mm-hmm. I like bringing the ancestors in the mm-hmm. room. I like calling out the name of the people who are yes. no longer here, but they are amongst us. Mm-hmm. Something special about that at each and every Kwanzaa.
Yes.
Y'all have brought up some folks I hadn't thought of in a while. So when we think back of Kwanzaa in San Diego, I'm going to ask you for a roll call. You mentioned Starla Lewis a minute ago. You just mentioned the Pyramid Bookstore.
Yes, oh, Barbara. Right?
So as we go back through the years, who are the people? Who are the institutions that, you know, make you smile, make you feel good because we yeah. experienced it and they may no longer be here? Oh, we have to tell the story of the Pyramid Bookstore, right, and how yes. it moved to different places.
Yes.
I can name a few people.
Yes.
Ancestors. Sacco Kwayana.
Oh.
Nnamdi Afi. Josh from Wolfolk.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon Grant Henry. UCSD product.
Mm-hmm. Charles and Shirley Thomas.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Chuck Ambers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marlon Karinga. Mm-hmm.
Danny Scarborough.
Yes.
Wow.
You know, I think about people like Dr. Willie Morrow.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, showing, you know, instead of telling how to do business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Elder Robert Tambuzi.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Walter Kadumu.
Yeah.
Aisha.
Yeah, my mom's still here, but yeah. Maisha Kadumu, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, and Makeda.
Oh, my God.
Makeda Dress, still holding it down at World Beat, you know, still holding down Kwanzaa every year. You know, this year she's got 3 or 4 days where she feeds the community as an open karamu, open food to everyone that comes.
Sister Salimu. Oh,
yes, yeah, Salimu, yes.
Yeah.
And Tamu.
Yeah.
When I think about our ancestors and the people that poured into us, my hope is that we get better at taking care of them. Because as I listen to like the names that are being called out, I think about people that we could have and should have done better by. Mm-hmm. And you know, and the hope is that like we've learned from this, and that we go forward in even more unified and supportive direction.
Yeah.
Sadakifu.
Yeah. And not just the answers, but some of the people that are still amongst us.
Yes.
And have those conversations. And perhaps next year at this time, we could bring them in, some of the elders that, you know,
been around a while. And
so my favorite part of libation is actually when we think about the future.
Yeah.
Because I think that it brings in that accountability to like create and build and pour in a way that, you know, future generations are positioned better than we were. And that they look back, like I want my great, 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 great grandchildren to say, you know what, I'm really glad my grandma did X, Y, and Z because now I can do this. Yeah. And I think the fact Kwanzaa covers everything from reflecting on history and what's there to definitely thinking about the future and, you know, making sure that we pour into the young people around us.
Sukumu and his gumbo.
He's still with us.
Yeah, he's still with us. I'm just mentioning people, whether they're with us or not. Yeah, but, you know, just that bring a smile to my face when I think about Kwanzaa and the way we celebrate it here in San Diego.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that in because I'm trying to think, when's the last time I've been in that personal space, the presence? And that's what I'm saying, bringing people out in. Mm-hmm. Not just for us, but our young people or younger people need to see that as well and hear from them.
And connecting our young people with those elders.
Because we're not doing what we're doing just because we're doing so great. It's those people that came before us.
Right, mm-hmm. Those shoulders.
So, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. People will be able to hear voices on this podcast and understand what it is that we're talking about. But very few people will be able to sit in a room amongst the elders that I'm sitting amongst right now and sharing the vision and the energy that they have for years to come and years past. With what everyone has said about connecting the elders with the youth, I think that is something that is very, very detrimental, especially at this point in time in the society that we live in. A lot of people have forgotten who they are and forgotten where they've come from. They've forgotten how to learn and they've forgotten how to listen. Once we get back to a point to where we're listening to what people are telling us, not because they think that they know more than we do, but because they've been places that we've never been before. We have come off the beaten path when it comes to connecting and understanding and a vision that some of our ancestors and our elders had for us. Me, personally, I am my ancestors' wildest dreams. I know that. And I will continue to be. My parents and my grandparents raised me to be someone who was upstanding and honorable. And I want to continue that in my life and in the life of my children. I think it is very important that the youth of today and of this world, that they hear these voices and not only hear them, but listen to them and understand them. Because I think that it's detrimental to the progression, not of this world, but of this universe. We have to do better, as you said, to honor the people that have been here before. But not only the people that aren't here anymore, we need to honor the people that are still here so that they can hear the praises, so that they can understand the appreciation that we have for them moving forward into this world and into the future. Mm-hmm. I take great pride in being able to walk amongst some of the people that I'm with every day, no matter where they're from or what they've done. They have something to offer to me. Mm-hmm. We just have to do better. And we have to continue to progress and continue to climb. It's not finger pointing. It's not a blame game. Nobody's done anything wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just time to pivot and to adjust so that we can make things better and stop worrying about the things that have happened and start to make things happen so that we can change the dexterity of how things are and what we want them to be. Mm.
Ashe. You know, as you were speaking, I was thinking my mind is like moving into action in terms of implementing. How do we implement that? You know, how do we operationalize that? And it's like, we need to do something. First thing that came to my mind is we need to do something where we have our elders and our youth come together, whether we do a elder youth lunch, you know, as a part of Kwanzaa or whatever, you know, like we could do it at George Stevens Senior Center, you know, at Martin Luther King Park, or, you know, we could do it somewhere. We could do it in the garden, you know, we could do it at World Beat. This is the first thing that, you know, but then you said something really key. They don't want to listen. Mm.
And I started reflecting on youth right now that I interact with, including my own, but just around. And it's like they know so much because they got this phone, they got, which is a computer. They've got all this, you know, way to touch into what they consider knowledge. And we know that facts is not knowledge, but that's what they think, right? Yeah. And so then I said, you know, the reason we listened is because it was normalized for elders and youth to be together. It wasn't just one day during Kwanzaa once a year. We got together monthly. We got together sometimes weekly. So you had to be in rooms where you had to listen to elders and you were asked questions about what they were talking about. So you couldn't pretend you were listening while you were on your phone or at doing computer. You had to really be listening, right? And so I was like, we need to, when we operationalize this thing, which I no doubt think we will do, you know, we will do it in a way that repeats itself enough that it normalizes elders and youth being together for our youth right now, so that they will get used to sitting and listening at the feet of their elders. I think that that's important.
So I'm gonna just add something to that, because I agree with everything you said. I also think that we, have to normalize also listening to them, because there are a lot of things, there's a lot of opportunity for intergenerational sharing and communication and learning. And a lot of times, especially when you start getting into your older young people, which is a demographic that I work with a lot through Afrofuturism, they have so much to offer. Like a lot of times I'll be in a room full of young people and I'll put out an idea of something that I want to do. And then by the time they finish, they've like turned it into something that I never imagined. And I think that intergenerational sharing and communication is something that will take us to the next level. I also do think we have to renormalize respect for our elders. Because respect for our elders is not about agreeing with everything they say. It's about having enough respect to, if we do disagree, to disagree respectfully.
And I think that that is not something that is just given. I think that that is a learned process. I think that people need to learn how to be respectful and to learn how to agree to disagree and to understand that it's okay not to be right all the time. You know, you have to learn how to take constructive criticism and understand, you know, how to distribute the information that you have without offending people. One thing that my mom says to me all the time is to eat the chicken and spit out the bones, which means eat what's necessary and discard what's not needed. Sometimes just listen. You don't have to speak. God gave you two ears and one mouth to talk less and to listen more. So we need to go ahead and, you know, kind of facilitate that practice to where, like you said, we listen to the youth, and in turn, you know, maybe the youth will start to listen to the elders more, because it's not a finger pointing battle and it's not a, you know, a disciplinary action that we're trying to partake into. We are trying to get points across and we are trying to expand ideologies so that we can cover more bases other than just coming from one side of the spectrum.
No, I'm going to listen. I'm going to wait.
So with that being said, we have discussed what we're talking about with the elders and the youth coming together. I think that is something that just needs to be done. It's something that's passionate to me, right? Because I do have, you know, elders in my family, which, you know, like my dad and my aunts and my uncles and, you know, my grandmother, who rest in peace, whose birthday was yesterday. She had a load of knowledge to give to us. And in her knowledge, she gave knowledge to my dad. So that's something that has to be respected going down the line. It's people giving birth to people who have something to offer in this world. And that needs to be respected and followed all the way down the line. It's not just a one-trick pony. This is a train that you jump off and you get on at each stop where the knowledge is available to you.
So I think one of the things that gets lost, I think ideology is important. And I think principles are important and practice is important. But I think the thing that gets lost sometimes is the love.
because there are things that sometimes I say to people that if anybody else said it to them, they would receive it and be defensive or angry or hurt. But because they know that I'm saying it to them out of love and I'm saying it to them because I love them, they receive it in a different way. Even if they bristle at it, they're more open to receiving it. And in the same way, when people say something to me that maybe I don't want to hear, but I know that that person cares about me and I know that they're saying it from a loving place, I receive it differently. Sis here checks me on a regular basis, but I receive it because I know that it's coming from a place of wanting to see me do well as opposed to trying to tear me down. And I think if we can normalize that again, you know, I wish we would go back to music like in the 70s, where it was all about how much we love each other. Maybe we could remember to love each other and remember that we do love each other.
Yeah. It's not lost on me that so many people around this table chose Kuji Chagaliya as their favorite principle, you know, self-determination. And when we talk about being open to loving one another, I think we've gotten far away from loving ourselves. Yes. And I think that when we bring ourselves back to that, to loving ourselves, what does it truly mean to rest in self-love? Then I think we can begin again, or, you know, it's not that we ever really stopped, but I think we'll move further in this community building effort that we're all partaking in, you know, building community together. So self-love is something that we've got to stress.
I think that we shared a lot of wisdom today, and in the sake of time, I just want to sum up and say this is like a goodness, right, that comes from being culturally rooted and culturally rooted practices, and we're talking about transmitting, if you will, the principles of culture to the future and those who are going to live in the future that look like us. So let me ask this question. Might not be the last question, but we introduced ourselves by how we got introduced to Kwanzaa. But as I listen to the room, y'all bring other skills, other experiences to the table. Who are you other than a Kwanzaa practitioner? What else defines who you are? We've talked about Afrofuturism. I know that you run a program. Who are y'all people? So people that know us in our full spectrum of who we are. So it's not just some certain type of people that practices something. We are across some different kinds of ways of being. Who are you? Anybody can start.
So, you know, people know like that I talk about Afrofuturism, and what they don't know is that it comes from like a grounding in a cultural basis, and that, you know, even though a lot of times the things that I talk about seem kind of squishy, touchy-feely, I studied business. I have degrees in business, information systems, and educational leadership. I'm certified as a change management practitioner, as a restorative practices practitioner, Lean Six Sigma Green Belt project management professional. And I also learned how to do emotional emancipation circles. And so I understand the hard sciences. It's just that I really feel like our solutions are gonna come in how we people. And what I mean by that is how we relate to ourselves and how we connect with one another.
All right. I, Ras Barago Anyanwu, am a light. I am a light in the dark. I am a light in this community. I am the co-manager of the Mobile Farmers Market for Project New Village San Diego. I enjoy every day that I come to work, and I enjoy everything that I do. Every day I try and find the silver lining so that I can continue to be something and someone that people look forward to coming to see every day when they come to visit me, whether I'm working on the Four Corners or I'm at the Lemon Grove Farmers Market. I'm a father, I'm a son, I'm a nephew. I am a strong, determined young man that continues to build every day so that I can build bridges for the people that I come in contact with and the people that I continue to grow with every day.
That's what I'm saying.
Brother Swazi again. I'm a retired early childhood educator.
Hey.
But I just kind of like want to sum it up with what I am. I'm a elder. And as it says on our truck at Project New Village, it's farmer, teacher, and healer. That's who I am, what I am.
Again, my name is Mwenda Kadumu Biggs, and started my science journey here in Southeast San Diego at the Elementary Institute of Science when I was 7 years old, and decided right then and there that I was going to be a scientist.
Hey.
So I am that as well. And it would be science that would bring me to West Africa, to Ghana. And it would also be science that would bring me back home to San Diego. I'm now the Vice President of Community Service and Engagement at the Fleet Science Center in Balboa Park, a science center that I grew up going to when I was in elementary and junior high school and even high school. So full circle moment there. Wow. To do science in San Diego and to do it in a way that I can involve the community that I grew up in. So really looking to bring science, interaction, STEM, support, finances, and resources to Southeastern San Diego, because they brought it, that this community brought it to me. So this is my way of giving back to what so much was given to me. So that's who I am. But I'm also an artist. I'm a painter. Thank you. I'm a writer. I'm a dancer. I danced with NIA organization, US organization, when I was growing up. And then again with Danny Scarborough at San Diego State. So I'm all of those things. But I think most importantly, I am what you are. I am light. Yeah. And that is the most important thing.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, Brother Jonathan, you bring out so much. I always forget about like the people part of me. So Firi Ali, people know Firi Ali. The whole thing is Firi Ali Mtumwa Kambone. And it wasn't from a naming ceremony. I was an officer in the African Cultural Society. And in order to be an officer, you had to have an African name. And I started with Firi Ali because I couldn't put myself in a box. I've never been good at that. And that means extraordinary. And then I tempered it with Mtumwa because it's a messenger or servant, and wrapped it up with Kambone because me and the sisters that I ran with at that time, we learned that Kambone meant for and of the people. And we all decided that we were for and of the people and that we wanted to have the same last name because we were sisters. And that's where Kambone comes from. And I like to think that, you know, similar to some of the poems I wrote back then, that I have grown into who I had decided I was gonna be way back then when I was in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm. Full circle.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm a race conscious community organizer that likes being around my people. So today I'm experiencing a lot of happiness at this table. There's generations of, I don't know, knowledges and experiences, and it just feels good and warm and righteous in this room.
I'm so used to this host. My name is Brandon. I'll say the core of who I am is I'm a lifelong learner, but I'm also, I really am passionate about taking what I learn and teaching it. But teaching holistically, I really believe that humanity can be challenging. And even more so. And I maybe sometimes obsess about just taking a lot of information in, both from my grandmother, who's no longer here anymore, from my mother, who's no longer here, from life, from documentaries, from work. And then saying, all right, how do you take these things and then translate it to something palatable for other people so they can say, oh, okay, I got a little bit of hope. I got a little bit of hope because we're sitting at a table with really some deep thinkers, and that ain't really the case for most of the people I run into. Some people are just saying, you know, I'm just trying to get my head a little bit above water. Yeah. so I can understand how to be more self-determinate or be more creative. A lot of times it's tough to be creative when you're saying, yeah, but how do I feed myself today? And how do I keep the lights on so I can have this space to live more abundantly and to do some of these principles and to be free to think about them? I've just been around a lot of struggle. And so I say that I'm just obsessed with understanding how to be more free and helping other people be more free. Tattooed on me is the word freedom, 1831, the year of Nat Turner's revolt. And so sometimes I'm a little gangster about it, but it's really how I think. So I'll leave it at that.
That teaching and learning thing is really important. You know, it's like this idea that we are teachers, but that we are also learners. And I think we will forever be old and young in the same breath when we can do both.
Wow, what a great conversation. Thank you guys for listening. I want to thank our guest. Catch us here next time on Project Good Friends.